The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer. Season 3, Episode 1 features Michael McNerney, publisher of Martech Record, in conversation with Justin Cook, chairman of Demand Exchange.
I'm delighted to be joined today by Michael McNerney from Martech Record. Michael, thank you for joining us here at Advertising Week New York. How's it all going so far?
Good. I'm happy to be here. I was just saying, as we were discussing before, I find it a weird name for this because there's not a whole lot of advertising here. It's retail media, it's social, and it's all the stuff that tracks and pays that kind of stuff. But I haven't seen too much in terms of real advertising.
I think the bigger question is, what is advertising today, right? It's sort of what word can we use to describe? I guess Martech is probably one.
Well, I mean, according to this conference, advertising is packaging giant audiences and then measuring that and creating some sort of metric that says you got some ROI and then being on your way.
We can unpack that a little bit more. So for those people that don't know you, tell us a little bit about Martech Record.
Sure. Martech Record is a trade publication, mm-hmm. Meaning, a B2B publication. We cover commerce media and affiliate marketing. So what that means is, we write reviews of, technology platforms that, track, report, pay in the affiliate space. We cover kind of, how publishers build their products and go to market. And we do that in what I like to say is a typical, very boring trade publication kind of way. We have newsletters, we've got live events, we have a webinar every month, or we try to have one every month if I can get my act together. And our goal really is, how do we help people in our particular market, make better decisions and quicker decisions? And that is, the role of a trade publication is, grease the wheels of commerce a little bit by creating some trust between a buyer and a seller.
And when and how did you start?
Well, I was working, so my career is trade publishing. I worked mm-hmm. at a company called McGraw-Hill, which is a big, publisher. And at the time, they had a collection of trade publications, and I was the GM of their digital media business, really at the wrong time to be the GM of a digital media business. It was very much as the consumer and the reader were changing habits and moving online, but before there was any real tools to monetize that audience. And so, the job, unfortunately, was a lot of, restructuring sales teams and shutting down printing plants more than it was doing innovative, things with digital audiences. And so I eventually found my way, after we sold those businesses, to a affiliate marketing platform, which I knew nothing about. Got into it, learned very quickly that the best way to learn about affiliate marketing was just to go to conferences and have a few drinks with affiliate marketers, which was plenty fun, but not all that scalable. And it occurred to me that, affiliate or commerce or whatever you call monetizing content directly through a sale was going to be a big driver of growth for publishers. I mean, I could see that because I had done that before. And I was probably the only guy in the world that had background of knowing how to run a trade publication and knowing something about affiliate marketing. So I thought I could be more effective if I started a trade publication that was independent, that provided some useful information to this market and helped create a little scale. And so I did that about 4 years ago, and here we are, all grown up.
And how's it all going?
It's great. We have a great audience. We've got, anytime you do trade or B2B, you have a niche audience, and it's more important that they are engaged and that they are communicating with each other than it is the size. So we've got about 9,000 marketers, publishers, technology providers like yourself, agencies, of course, who use our platforms to find buyers and sellers every day. We've got this crazy Slack community of 4,000 or 5,000 people who every day are kind of asking questions, getting answers, connecting with each other, and we've been able to monetize it fairly effectively through sponsorship, through some events where we sell tickets to, and kind of getting all the people in the right room.
Really interesting that you've effectively come from that traditional sort of publishing background and then found your niche and now built a business off the back of perhaps, you know, kind of some people would say quite challenging kind of monetization headwinds, I suppose, in a sense.
Yeah, I think so. It is a challenging kind of environment right now for advertisers or for publishers of any kind, right? But there are some headwinds, and I think this is where it kind of collides with what you guys probably do a little bit. You know, 4 or 5 years ago when I thought of this idea, you know, the drivers that were clear to me were as follows, right? One is that e-commerce was going to grow, you know, no matter what happened in the market, you know, we're going to continue for a long time to see e-commerce adoption grow globally, right? And the second was working at PartnerEyes and looking at the data of what people were buying online, kind of a simple truth became pretty clear. And that was, you know, over time, the things that people were buying online were going to get more expensive and more complex from a sales process standpoint. So, you know, for example, 10 years ago, we all bought, you know, we bought shoes and books online, pretty simple, pretty low price. Now people are buying, you know, healthcare and mattresses, things that you would have considered like had to be in-store purchases or long decision cycles. And so, you know, I thought to myself, if you just follow that trend line, right, you know, what's the end point, right? Well, it's enterprise software, right? And, you know, so I thought, hey, look, at some point, people are going to read reviews of enterprise software companies, use that as a basis of their decision making. And when they do, I want to have been in that space and have created a brand that people trust. And so that's what we've done. And I think we're kind of getting to that point. I'd love your guys' perspective on, like, you know, are people showing up having read content when they learn about you guys and you know, ahead of time?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the number of kind of interactions that, you know, a buyer has today is more now than it ever has been before they kind of arrive to a point of being prepared to enter into even a kind of conversation, I would say. And the number of touch points they kind of cross, I don't think has ever been broader as well. So I think that absolutely, you know, from my side, you have a very valuable kind of role to play in that process. Who do you compete with? Like how do you kind of differentiate against that competition?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any direct competitor. I don't think anyone else was dumb enough to think, you know, I'm going to cover the affiliate marketing industry, which is like, you know, 5% of total ad spend. You know, but I was able to do it because the barriers to creating content have lowered so much, right? And so it's something you couldn't have really covered effectively 20 years ago because the barriers to building a media brand were much higher, and this was a pretty small market. I also bet on the fact that the market was going to grow, and it has. But, you know, so I think of competition more in terms of where are my clients spending their money, right? And, you know, where can I make that easier for them, right? You know, and I think as, you know, you guys are a B2B marketer, and, you know, at the end of the day, you want to meet people, right? You want to get in front of your customers, right? And so, you know, I try to think of, you know, how can I just make it a little bit less expensive and more highly impactful? And so the way you do that is you create great content, right? You create content that a buyer wants to read, or you create an event with a speaker that they really need to speak to. If you've built a trustworthy media brand, it's just easier for me to get that person in a room than it is for, you know, an advertiser, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, they're going to respond to my call because I have an audience and I've got some trust among that audience. And so that's what allows me to do what they're trying to do with their sales team a little bit less expensive, you know, and maybe hopefully more effectively. And so that's how you compete with that budget, you know, because that budget's a budget they would use to fly someone to New York to go to Ad Week, right? You know, and if I can come in and say, look, I'll get you those 10 meetings, right, for a tenth of the cost, that's the budget I'm competing with.
Yeah, absolutely. Competing for budget and somewhat competing for time as well, right,
yes.
In terms of that. That's really interesting. When you talk about great content, what does that mean to you and or your kind of, you know, your readers nowadays?
Well,
how has it changed, you know, over the many years you've been doing this?
Well, I don't know if there was ever great content in the kind of affiliate space. I think that's one of the reasons I started this is, frankly, I went to the conferences and I said, I can do better than this.
Right? Yeah.
And the bar was a little bit low, I think.
Yeah.
Which is why I picked this industry is, you know, if you get into some industries that are much bigger, have more dollars in them, you're going to encounter some great content. But... The second thing I did was I would have these webinars, and every time someone sponsored the webinar, they'd assume that their CEO would be on the panel, right? And my first policy was none of your CEOs are ever speaking on any of my panels. And you know why? Because CEOs say what they want to say, right? They're very good at taking a question and reframing it and saying whatever the hell they want to say, right? And so I made a point of making anyone who spoke, the perfect person is the person who's just been promoted to vice president. And the reason is because they now have authority, right? They now have things to share, but they haven't been media trained. And so they're going to tell you the truth, right? And so what I do to get great content is I ask the right people, right? And the right person is never the CEO, right? That person is well too trained to answer the question that I really want answered. And so you get the right people in the room is what you do. And you do that by building trust with the teams and the people in the market.
And how do you supplement that sort of in-person, real-world, physical kind of experience with the opposite?
What do you mean exactly?
Oh, you're running an event,
yeah.
And I'm here we are at Ad Week. Then that event is it's going to run from the 7th to the 10th of October.
Yep.
What happens on the 11th? What happens before?
Yeah. So I don't think of our business as singular products, right? It is a community, which is maybe an overused word.
Yeah. But, well, you mentioned Discord, which is a brilliant example.
Yeah, yeah. Slack, cool. Right. So I try to think of every interaction as something, we want to be the thin layer of trust that allows every transaction in the industry just to go a little bit easier, right? A little bit easier. And if you just do that consistently, you'll find yourself in all the places, right? And then your business isn't about, one trade show, right? It's about a community that finds, that finds itself and, discovers the right place to transact. And I've learned just by watching our audience, everyone's a little different, right? So, we have this Slack group with 4,000 people in it, right? Well, we have an email newsletter with 9,000 people on it, right? So obviously not everyone's in both groups, right? We have 5 live events a year that, an average of about 200 people show up at. They're pretty tight.
Yeah.
And there's obviously some Venn diagram. There's probably like one person who does every single one of these things. Mm-hmm. I got to find that person and give them a gold star or something. But the reality is you got your people who are Slack people who just love sitting there all day and asking random questions, mm-hmm. and engaging and debating, right? Then you got your newsletter people who like to, read and kind of be left alone and pass it on to a colleague, right? And then you got your live event people who are at every single live event, right? And that's how they kind of get their, get their energy, if you will. And you've got to cater to them all if you're going to create, a true community. And so that's what we do is, we're not a newsletter business. We're not an events business. We're not a Slack business. We're a business of connecting buyers and sellers in this industry.
And, just before we started this podcast, you were joking in the fact that you're now sitting kind of in a different seat, right?
This is normally, on your side of this equation, interviewing people. This is much better. I just get to ramble on about stuff.
It's gold dust, I think, actually, rather than rambling on. But anyway, let's see what the audience think.
Yeah, well, that's how we'll know.
So, I think it's really interesting when you talk about Slack and when you talk about podcasts, you talk about webinars, you talk about email newsletters, and giving people the right kind of content, in the format that they want to consume. Kind of where do you think that's kind of going for kind of B2B kind of trade publishers?
Well, the bet I made 5 years ago is one that I would double down on today, and that is things that are purchased online, right, are going to get more expensive, and the sales process is more complex. And what that means is it's more trackable, right? And there's just no question to me that, and I think we're already partially there, is that buyers of enterprise technology are going to do a lot of homework before they talk to your sales guy, right? Whereas in the past, it may have been a cold call, you get through to them. Now that call is probably screened, but if they're interested, they might go online and do a little bit of research. The second trend, or second or third, whatever number we're on right now, that I think is super important is that the consumer is getting smarter about content online. Right? 10 years ago, mm-hmm. you could come up with some random list, have them fall on it online, and they'd be like, oh, this must be the best blender, right? people are past that, right? Like, they figured out that this is all, you know, an SEO optimized game. And so, you know, the G2s of the world, for example, could win 10 years ago because, you know, they were great at web scraping and, you know, really, really good at, like, you know, SEO. Like, those two things could create a B2B, you know, business. But, like, I don't think anyone goes to their quadrants anymore and thinks, like, oh, this definitely is the best, you know, this quadrant or whatever. Even, like, Forrester now is kind of sold out, right? And so all those guys kind of sold out a little bit. And I mean, not trying to like criticize. They made a lot of money and they're good companies. Mm-hmm. And I would trade with them in a heartbeat probably. Like, I've got this tiny little company. So not a criticism. But with the consumer getting smarter and understanding what's real online and what's not, and us coming to a place in which people are going to read good stuff about these enterprise pieces of technology, you know, you want an independent trade publication in the middle of it that is trusted, right? And my bet is that if we just keep creating, you know, independent content that's good, you know, at some point you're going to be able to track that, and you know, an advertiser like yourself might come to me and say, well, you are worthwhile. You are the people we want to associate our brand with, and it's already worked, you know, to some extent. I think the adoption from the users and the buyers is kind of halfway there. I think they're reading a lot of this content. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that there's some probably technology challenges because the buying process is very complex in a B2B process. And I don't know if we'll get all the way to a point where it's like an affiliate sale or something, but we're getting there and it's the right trend. So I think that's a long answer to your
question. It's a great answer. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head, frankly. I think that complexity and the maturity of the space as well, and sort of the breadth of who's involved in making that decision as well, right? In terms of, you know, what everyone kind of in a slightly more cliched way describes as the buying committee, right? Yes. How do you kind of cater for the kind of the broad kind of buying committee as a publisher?
Well, I think this is where being a publisher and being a brand of some kind are exactly the same, right? You got to know who your target audience is, right? And if you try to go too broad, you know, you're not going to be very effective in communicating. And so, you know, we know exactly who we're talking to, right? If it's a brand, you know, we're talking to the affiliate marketing manager or the person in charge of their performance marketing budget, and we're helping them make decisions by reviewing technology. It's very simple, right? If we're talking to a publisher, we're talking to the person in charge of hiring the sales team and in charge of you know, building out the product, pricing things, incentive structures. And then we just try to think, like, what difficult decisions do they have to make during the day? And then we try to answer those questions. We bring in people who've answered those questions, and we have put them on interviews like this, and we have them describe how they build their teams and what they do. And, you know, so we stay targeted. You know, we don't play outside the box, right? Like, I'm not going to start talking about programmatic advertising or social or search and all this stuff that I don't understand that's going on around me. All the exciting stuff that people like to talk about. We stay away from that, try to make it as boring as possible. That's the key.
Stay focused.
Yes, stay focused on the target audience.
And what have you seen from a more international kind of perspective? Are you primarily kind of sort of, you know, Western and or America's kind of focused?
Yeah, you know, I wish that we had this giant global audience so I could create excuses to, you know, have events in London and Tahiti or whatever. But the audience is 90% North American, and 90% of that is, you know, U.S. based. And, you know, part of that is, you know, what makes affiliate marketing unique is that it has a real scale challenge. And that's because even in one market like the U.S., you know, you've got to go out and negotiate deals with, you know, every different publisher. And the dynamics in each market get very different in a way that, you know, search, social, programmatic are not different, right? There's all sorts of different regulations.
Yeah.
You know, currency issues are a challenge because you're actually paying the publisher based on an action. And, you know, that gets complicated. It does tend to be a fairly regionalized market. There are obviously some big global trends, and we talked to that, and we have, you know, a small audience of people in different countries, and I hope that grows. But the U.S. is big enough right now for me. You know, I used to think we'd be global quickly, but, you know, there's enough challenges here.
And it's the 20th anniversary of Advertising Week here in New York. That's sort of like, so give me a kind of plotted history of kind of how kind of affiliate marketing has kind of evolved, you know, kind of over that period.
Sure. Well, it's funny. It's the 20th anniversary. It's also the 20th anniversary of the year I left advertising.
Wow.
In New York. And so I worked at Ogilvy & Mather.
Some sort of coincidence here?
I don't know. 20 years ago, 2004, I was working at Ogilvy & Mather in New York. And I quit and went to business school and thought I'd never be in the ad world again. And here I am at Adweek. So, shows how things go. But affiliate marketing is just... it has been in its own weird bubble for most of the last 20 years, right? And that's because the incentive structures, the measurement, the payments are all different than the rest of marketing. And so marketers love to set up teams, based on what KPIs they can kind of put in one space and then measure against. And affiliates always had a kind of a challenge in that spot because, you pay on an action, not on kind of the scale that these guys do. And so for, call it 15 of those 20 years, affiliate was kind of dominated by publishers that focused on coupons, cashback, loyalty, things that you could really measure and pay on an action against. That has changed dramatically in the last five years. And affiliate has suddenly become something you can use to monetize almost any type of content, right? And that's where we kind of saw the trend going and started following. And that's probably why we cover, a broader scope of the market. But you can be the New York Times, you can be a creator, you can be an email marketer. Retail media is an example of affiliate marketing in its own way, right? And a portion of your revenue is going to come from affiliate. Now, you may not call it affiliate anymore, right? It's kind of out of the box now. You may call it performance PR, or you may call it commerce media, or you may call it just commerce, right? And you may be doing that to get away from what has been a stigmatized channel for a long time. But the reality is it's affiliate marketing, right? And, people have always, said, hey, just don't call it affiliate. Call it something else. Make up another name for it. And I'm like, no, it's these are partners. They're affiliates, and it's funny. When I do call it something different, I get more advertisers. It does work. It's funny. Like, I'll stop calling it affiliate, and I'll get a whole other advertiser will come in and say, oh, we do commerce media, and we'd love to talk about that. And so, to sell some sponsorships, I'll call it something different. But, between you and I and the audience, when you pay a commission to a partner for an action, that's what we cover. And that action is starting to be weaved into every type of a content that exists, right? Like, there isn't a piece of content anymore that isn't monetized on some level, through commerce that's measured, right? And so that's what we cover. I call it affiliate because, that's how I was introduced to this particular tactic. But, people in our audience call it, 12 different things for 12 different reasons, that's for sure.
How big is it now?
How big is affiliate marketing?
Yeah.
Well, eMarketer just did a nice report. It depends how you look at it.
Yeah.
Affiliate, if you define it as, publishers, independent publishers that are driving revenue through commerce, is about a $11 billion industry, which is big, but, retail media is a $100 billion industry, or $80 billion, or will be $100 next year. So compared to that, it's not huge, but it's now being stitched into all these different types of content. And so the growth you see is interesting. It's growing, but it's also growing in where it exists and who's managing it. And it creates a lot of complexities around how you manage your marketing team and who does the affiliate portion, or how you build products if you're a publisher. And it's starting to kind of really impact how teams are structured and incentive structures are built, which is kind of what we cover, which is, for me, really interesting.
And if you're a retailer, you're a brand, you're a publisher, a creator, but you're not yet using kind of the power of affiliate marketing, what are your kind of strategic kind of recommendations and steps that you'd sort of make?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, if you're, a marketer in an industry where, affiliate is effective, it's more effective in certain industries than others. The first thing you've got to kind of understand is, unlike all of what's around us here, affiliate marketing is the last relationship-based industry out there, right? And it takes, time to develop the relationships that are required. Because if you think about it, you are giving your brand, to another publisher or another partner, and you're saying, sell this for me, right? So in some ways, you have to think about it more like a sales channel than you would, a marketing channel or a communication channel.
Yeah, interesting.
Right? And that takes a while to like work. Think of it like building a building up a salesperson. You know,
yeah.
It takes a while to train them, make sure they understand the the value prop of your product, make sure they're excited about it, right? You're incenting them the right way, right? And once you do that to a good salesperson, you're off to the races, right? I mean, that becomes scale right there. But it takes a little bit of effort upfront to do that. And so I think that is the biggest thing a person not an affiliate has to kind of wrap their head around is like, this isn't just, the high frequency trading of search and social, right? It is relationship based. And so either hire someone yourself who knows what they're doing, or get yourself an agency that knows what they're doing and commit 6 months to kind of learning and failing and building, and then you'll be successful. If you need it to work as quickly as search works, it's not going to happen. But we're living in a world where search is so expensive right now that mm-hmm. you need an alternative. So you might as well start, figuring it out now and not waiting till later.
And once you've done that hard work and you've tested and learned and you've reached a sort of, steady kind of state, as a contribution to overall sort of revenue, what is a good bar?
It's really, I don't think, possible to say,
right?
Because there's so much changing, so, like we just discussed before. And so let me give you an example.
Right? Yeah.
Is right now, most reviews are monetized via affiliate marketing, right? Almost every one of these review sites you read are monetized that way. And most consumers are reading a lot of reviews before they make purchases, right? Now, if you're the head of brand at a company, do you not think that those reviews that are being read at a huge rate are having a massive impact on how someone thinks about your brand, right?
Hugely.
Huge, right? And I'll give you an example of someone we recently had on one of our events. Head of marketing for Health Aid Kombucha,
yep.
Right? Kombucha company. And I was prepping for one of these sessions with her, and I said, how much of your revenue is affiliate? She said, well, only 3% of my revenue is even digital. And I said, well, wait a minute, what are you doing here, right? And she said, look, if you're going to walk in store and you're going to buy Health Aid Kombucha, you're going to probably have spent a lot of time ahead of time understanding gut health, reading reviews of what type of products impact your gut health. And so even though a tiny percentage of my sales come through affiliate marketing or even digital, a huge percentage of brand awareness of the problem we're trying to solve come from the reviews written by commerce editors, right? And so, you can give these bars on ROI.
Yeah.
But if you're a brand marketer and you don't think that the affiliate marketing person in your team has an enormous impact on your brand with all those relationships they have and they've developed with those commerce editors that are writing those reviews, like, you're very wrong. And so I've taken, one habit I have is anytime I meet, a CMO or someone in a senior position in a marketing organization, I just ask, where do you put your affiliate team? And if they say something interesting, I keep them around, right? And you'd be fascinated. Like, on the same panel with Health Aid Kombucha, we had a woman from Avocado Green Mattress, the sustainable mattress brand. And they put their affiliate person on the product team. So developing the product, which I thought was fascinating. And the reason why is because, the partners, the reviewers, the commerce editors need to know about changes to product 6 months ahead of time so they can think about how to write about that, review that, right? And so this woman put her affiliate person on the product team and said, you make sure you know when product changes are coming so you can tell the market, right? And you can make sure these editors are incorporating that into their future plans about what they're going to review and how they're going to write, which is different than the rest of marketing where you create an ad and put it out there and tell everyone about it. Look for brand lift, 6 months later or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, isn't it? Because, it's also it's the relationship between sales and marketing and product, right? That classic kind of triangle.
It kind of stitches it together.
Yeah. I love it. That's a really, really interesting kind of concept. In terms of just going back to that point around measuring, I suppose, in a sense, and attribution and how you kind of are able to kind of justify inverted commas kind of your spend, sort of like, again, dig into that for me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one because affiliate tends to pay on last click, and there's all these efforts to kind of get away from that, right? But it's not happening, right? It keeps becoming loud because it's easier, and the alternatives aren't necessarily better, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon. I think Last Click will probably stick around probably forever in some capacity. But that doesn't mean you can't acknowledge the value that affiliate is adding to your brand in other ways. And the reason you should do it, by the way, is not just because of the metric, right? Not just, but it's because if you acknowledge that these reviews for, I keep using reviews.
Yeah, it's a good example.
You know, it could be, emails that go out and talk about your product or whatever, then you're going to put some resources against it, right? Then you're going to say, all right, let's acknowledge that we need to think about what's being written about us from these commerce editors the same way we put thought into, you know, our brand ads, where we sit down and we say, you know, who's our target audience? What's our positioning statement? You would be shocked. I talked to a lot of commerce editors, and very few of them get pitches from affiliate marketers that say, you know, here's the target. Here's our positioning statement. Mm-hmm. We've read your editorial calendar. We know that you're writing about this category, in December. Here's an idea how, that doesn't happen very often. And it's probably because the affiliate teams are not, in most cases, attached to the marketing teams the way a lot of other parts of the organization are, right? And so they don't know what's happening, right? So if you're a CMO out there, get that person in the room, because they have a huge impact on your brand. And you may end up just paying on last click and measuring ROI that way, which is fine. It'll work. But you've got to know that these guys are having a bigger impact than you may realize.
We need to create e-commerce media and or commerce media and or affiliate marketing brief template.
That would be, so this is actually something we're trying to address. So we have this 4,000 person Slack group, right? That's very active. And the things we've been testing are, can we create what we're calling, right, the commerce media room? And so we have a Slack channel that's private. You have to get invited, if you're a brand. And if you want to submit, your brand for consideration from our, audience of commerce editors, you have to fill out a brief, right? And, these are back to my Ogilvy days, right? I thought I was gone. Pull me back in. But I found myself, creating a brief, giving it to the brands, having them fill it out. Then I give it to the publishers, and it's funny, they're very appreciative. They're like, yes, this is exactly what we want. We want to know who the target is, what they're trying to say, what the timing is, all the stuff that I learned, in my first job back in my advertising days.
That's a hugely valuable role to play as a publisher, man. It's great.
It's funny that those basic lessons you learn in your first job sometimes are the most valuable.
It's a great place to learn, Ogilvy and Mather.
Yeah, it was a good spot.
Yeah, long may they rest in peace.
They're still around, right?
Yeah, exactly, and under some other name. Yeah absolutely. Yeah, really interesting. And in terms of you mentioned a couple of brands who you sort of admire and are sort of perhaps challenging the convention. Who's doing it well? Who's really killing it right now?
I have a client that I think is doing an amazing job called Connecto. And, this is B2B. I'm talking, B2B stuff. And they are doing a great job because they know who their target audience is, right? They know what the problem is, lack of awareness, right? And they understand that they have to be a little bit patient, right? And so, with us, they put together a campaign where once a week they're in the newsletter, right? And we purposely said for the first 3 months, don't say anything interesting. And I don't mean not interesting. I'm just said like everyone wants to pack their ad with like 50 different things. It's like no one's reading that. Like I wish they were reading that because then I could make a lot more money. But like let's think about our own behavior, right? It's like maybe you'll see the headline. Maybe if you're really interested in the product, might read a couple things. But it probably takes two or three times seeing that to be like, wait a minute, these guys are around. They keep being around, right? And so we created this strategy that said, look, just be present, all right? Just be present for a while. And then start sending your sales team to, the conferences in the industry, right? And then once they're there, let's start upgrading the ads and talking about benefits, right? Let's be clear about what those benefits are. And then let's worry about lead gen, for example. Once we've done those three things, and then you'll hit the lead, then we'll turn on like lead capture. We have, some tools that you can do that. When your sales guys are also going to the events and you're now talking about these benefits. So it's this kind of like the basics, again, we're back to Ogilvy, target audience, position, a media plan that's consistent over time, right, where you have enough reach and frequency to kind of accomplish your mission. I hate to say this to this audience, and we all know this, it's not brain surgery, right? It's just target audience, positioning statement, reach, frequency, you know, rinse and repeat. And, you know, but this company Connecto that's with us, I thought it's been doing a real smart job. So if any of our listeners are out there and they've noticed that, credit to the marketing team there.
Kudos. Well, okay, let's just imagine we're sitting here in 2044.
AW40, yeah.
How's the world changed?
Oh, God. The world of
yes,
affiliate marketing.
Exactly. It's very niche.
Let's stick to that.
Absolutely.
Look, I think, you know, the trends we've talked about here will continue, right? And that's, I bet on some very simple trends, right? And that is people will continue to buy stuff online. That's number one. And
how far does it go? What's the limit?
I mean,
new kidneys, hearts, what,
yeah,
brains?
I think everything, you know, will be bought, yeah, online. You, yeah, know, I, yeah, mean, I'm not talking about some dystopian, metaverse that we're living in, you know. But on some level, everything will be purchased online. And what I mean by on some level is, at the very least, you know, the research you do about it, you know, is going to be online, or it's going to be tracked online, right? Like, you know, these Amazon stores that came out a few years ago where, you know, you've got their app in your pocket and they know exactly where you're standing in the store, and that's not going away, right? And so, you know, on some level, everything will be kind of an online sale, right? And what are we at, like 22, 25% right now or something? So there's enormous growth to be had from that. The second trend that, you know, I bet on, you know, is that quality content will play a role in that process, and it'll play a role, even more importantly, at the higher, you know, the more expensive products, right? So when we get into enterprise sales, people actually want real reviews, right? Like, you know, it's not like, you know, you're just going to read some crappy review and decide to spend, you know, $1 million on a piece of technology, and so quality is going to kind of win out over time at the end of that kind of graph, meaning the more expensive, the more complicated items. I'm not a consumer media guy, so I don't know what'll happen to shoes and books and all of that. And then, you know, the third thing is, look, the consumer is going to continue to get smarter. All right, at the end of the day, the market works, and, you know, we're in a weird spot right now for media, but, you know, over time, the market will play out, and the consumer will drive, you know, what is produced, and the consumer wants good content. They want good reviews, and they're willing to, you know, my business has shown though they're willing to stick around if you provide it.
Well, I think you're going to be sticking around too, Michael. Listen, thanks very much for your time today. It's been a fascinating conversation around a very, very specific subject.
Very niche. I appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange provides the technology, content, and expertise to identify and acquire your next ideal customer.